Cheers.
Call Senate Hess to order on the 2nd of April, about 1:31 by my time. Sure appreciate everybody being on time. We do have a quorum. One piece of business we have before us today is SB 364, limit state aid for mental health care. I believe somebody from administration, maybe Mr. Hogan, has some amendments. There's actually one amendment. Five places in the bill, and I will move the amendment. And Mr. Wilkin, will you object?
Object for clarification.
And Mr. Hogan, will you tell us what you're doing here?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a copy of the amendment. I'll just look over.
Well, go ahead. Does everybody have a copy of the amendments?
You got it.
Are we in version A?
Yes.
Yes.
Sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Hogan. I'm the Director of the Division of Behavioral Health in the Department of Health and Social Services. I'm here to talk about the changes to Senate Bill 364. It's the bill having to do with diagnosis, evaluation, and treatment. We have submitted for the committee's approval, review and approval, a letter of intent outlining what the Department of Health and Social Services intent is regarding this legislation. It clearly outlines the department's intent to develop and support a continuum of mental health care, particularly hospital-based inpatient evaluation and treatment services, as are outlined in this particular bill.
Sir,
will we go any further?
Yes, sir. Yes, Senator Davis.
I don't see that.
That's
what I'm here. The letter of intent.
All right. Is it your intention, Mr. Hogan, that this letter of intent go with the bill?
It is, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. So let's all have a quick look here at it.
Marks on here.
Is there objection to the letter of intent?
A question, please. Paragraph 2, line 1, on my copy, appropriations is underlined. Is that supposed to be that way?
Where are we?
Senator Wilkin, through the chair, I am not sure why that is underlined. I also see some written language on the bottom. I believe this was faxed back and forth between the Attorney General's office and our office. It is not supposed to be underlined, nor is the writing supposed to be at the bottom of the page.
All right.
Delete that.
Sure. We can make note to remove the underline under appropriations in line paragraph 2, line 1.
And the written stuff at the bottom.
Yes.
All right. I guess somebody needs to move the letter of intent.
We move that one with an amendment.
We need to do the amendment first, I think.
I'll be both of them on.
Let's see. I withdraw my motion to adopt amendment number 1.
All right.
Okay, so we move your objection.
Yeah. Move the letter of intent with as amended.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, a letter of intent is adopted.
Move amendment number 1.
Object. All right. Mr. Hogan, please explain to us what you're doing here with amendment number 1. Walk us through it.
Mr. Chair, committee members, amendment number 1 is directly related to the language that we initially proposed changing shall in the original statute or in the current statute to may provide financial assistance for the committee's edification, we feel that by retaining Section 2 the way it's written in the proposed statute, that it is still clear that our financial obligation is only that up to the appropriation by the legislature, and that we feel that this change in Section 3 or Sentence 28 would not preclude or change the intent as outlined in Section 2.
Okay. Page 4, line 23, 28.
Again, Mr. Chair, fellow committee members, in working with our various stakeholders, particularly the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Association, the Mental Health Board, the Mental Health Trust, and others, we felt as though we could delete Section 7, in other words, all of those lines 23 through 28, and that it would not impair the intent of the bill. And so we have agreed to do that.
Okay. Any questions on this section? Page 5.
Lines 12 and 13. The recommendation here is to delete sections 1 through 9 and insert sections 1 through 8. I think what that reflects essentially is by deleting Section 7, there would only be 8 previous sections. And I believe the other subsequent changes are essentially related to the reduction in the overall number of sections, Mr. Chair.
Are there questions on the amendment? Gordon might be trying to squeeze a lunch in. All right. Is anyone who is here or on the LIOs on the net that wants to speak to us about the amendment? Sir, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Richard Rainery, Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Board. I want to say that I appreciate that the work that the division has done on this bill since the last time it was heard in this committee and also in the House S Committee of the House version. I want to say that, generally speaking, we're in support of the amendments that they've offered for the bill. I do have one question. I'm not quite clear on this, partly because we haven't had a lot of time to consider the amendments, and very little time to discuss them with the division. But my question is this. It seems to me that the letter of intent, which indicates that in the event of a shortfall in appropriations, the department will make every effort to identify additional financing sources, seems to be there's some contradiction between that and Section 2 of the bill, which says pretty plainly, notwithstanding any contrary provision, financial assistance under this chapter is subject to appropriation by the legislature. In talking with the division, I understand that they believe that there's not a contradiction there, and I'm generally willing to take their word for it, but I thought it might be something that you folks might want to think about.
I appreciate that. Any questions, Mr. Rainer? All right. I won't preclude your being able to speak to us again on the bill. Senator Guest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. What's the view of your board on the bill, given the amendments, and if Section 2 was taken out?
I think Section 2 is really the only one where we have any question. We I think when we were here last time, spoke directly to the may shall phrase in Section 3 and what we saw the potential for that creating. And, the letter of intent certainly reflects prior practice in the way the division has operated the program. So it's just this possibility of the conflict that is causing any hesitation on our part.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I might add that my understanding from the commissioner was that they were asking for a great deal more flexibility to be able to transfer funds between divisions in order to be able to, as time goes on, be able to fund things that needed it and so on, you know, and maybe that's is anticipating some degree of flexibility they may need for these kind of things, and we'll see.
Mr. Chairman, that was the way they described it to me as well, and if that's the case, then it's not an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think we made it clear on the record the last time we heard this bill that and the administration agreed that we wouldn't have folks who badly needed treatment who weren't getting it. And that, I think we put that on the record. Senator Guest.
Mr. Chair, I think that's the intent, and I respect that intent, but we're making law which sits on the books through multiple administrations, multiple commissioners and directors. And the fact is that this bill with Section 2 in it still leads to the possibility of funds not being available and not being given either to, you know, being given to a provider for these services, and therefore either that goes on all the rest of us to pay, or that person's on the street, or that person goes to API, and it still provides the uncertainty to the providers to ensure that we have this capacity in the state. So I appreciate the letter of intent and the discussion in committee, and that's been good, but this is statute.
Would you like to make an amendment? Take out Section 2?
I'll move to remove Section 2.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Senator Green?
No.
Senator Wilkins?
No.
Senator
Guest? Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Chair Dyson?
No. All right. The amendment fails. All right, we're back with the bill before us as amended. I'll note for your information that it appears as if the department's made a significant effort to answer the questions that came up. And the document looks like this. Mm-hmm. And if the committee members want, we'll go through them all. But we'll start out with what any committee members have questions on the answers the department has provided. And I appreciate it. It is. I was really appreciative. I asked the question, Mr. Hogan, of how can we be sure that when we, the state pays a provider, that they aren't cost shifting and aren't shifting costs from another function that they provide where they may not get cost recovery to this one where you all faithfully pay.
Mr. Chair, there are regulations that were noticed, and I believe the public comment period closed Wednesday, March 31st, which essentially allows the department to determine rates for distinct psychiatric units in acute care hospitals that would be separate from or different from how rates are established for other beds within the hospital. And I think that begins to move us towards some assurance that the true cost of providing mental health care is actually reflected in the rate rather than including additional costs from throughout the hospital. So I believe that does move us in that direction.
And do you or could you audit their billing and accounting to make sure that we weren't being taken advantage of?
Mr. Chair, I believe we do have that authority, yes.
Have you?
We routinely do site reviews of all of our community mental health providers, and recently did a site review of the Fairbanks, the psychiatric unit at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, looked closely at their medical records and scrutinized them closely. Also, as it's a requirement for any community mental health grantee to submit an independent audit to the department for annually for review.
Yeah, I'm an old enough horse to not take anecdotes as data, as my friend Senator Guest keeps telling me, and so on. But we keep hearing horror stories about, in fact, a fellow was telling me was when his wife was in the hospital, that he was billed $1.50 for every Q-tip, you know, that's used. And what do we allow in terms of markup for supplies that providers bill the state for?
Mr. Chair, I do know that the rate for hospitals is determined based on a Medicare cost report, and there are a number of different factors that go into developing that particular rate. I am not absolutely certain, but certainly something we could research for you, all of the factors that go into establishing that rate. But we would be glad to get that information for you.
Yeah, well, probably I'll ask it for somebody even more closely related to the hospital, so don't bother. But so the answer is that the state doesn't get billed for the cost. They get billed for the allowable rate.
Mr. Chair, that allowable rate is based on cost. So I do think they're linked.
But the answer to my question was yes.
The answer to your question, Mr. Chair, is yes.
Okay. All right. Any other questions on the questions and answers of the Department of Supplies? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an interesting table. It's the first time I've seen it all in one place. Could you just help me with an acronym? But I'm going to keep this table.
Senator Wilkin, I'm smiling because my colleague Bob Homaker and I have been trying to track down exactly what the initials stand for, because I knew what a committee member would ask, and I apologize.
Which one are you looking at?
It's this table. The reason the table is in here is it was generated from a question by Representative Seaton in House Hess about why was there a difference between the Denali Kid Care 175% of poverty rate versus the 185% of poverty rate that we use for DET. And Senator Wilkin, I apologize. I do not know what each of those letters stand for, but I promise to get that information for the committee. But what we tried to show is that there is a difference, interestingly enough, depending on what program is being financed using a particular percentage or percentage of poverty level.
Mr. Chairman, and could I ask also that, is this published every September? I see this one as 9102. Is there a 9103 that would be 204, 2004?
Senator Wilkin, through the chair, I would be glad to get that information for you. I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Senator Gaff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm reading off of the DET bill summary. That's in line.
Yes, Senator. Yes.
And I guess then, and I'll wrap it in with maybe a response you can give to the testimony we heard earlier, because there seems to be a contradiction in this intent, the bill, and your letter of intent. On the clearly communicates that costs incurred will only be covered by up to the amount appropriated by the legislature. Which is a little different than we'll look high and low for any other money and move money around letter of intent.
Senator Guest, through the chair, I understand where you could interpret that as a contradiction. I believe what we probably should have done was a better job of incorporating the intent language that is attached to the proposed statute and our summary. It is clearly our intent to follow what is attached to the statute. And again, I could understand why that would appear as a contradiction. I apologize for that, and we'll do a better job of rewording that.
I suspect what happened was, as I remember, we had this document last week. Since then, you've come up with the letter of intent and didn't go back and modify the language here.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I believe that is what happened.
Mr. Chair, nor is the statute changed, so there's still the contradiction.
Yeah, but the statute now does say shall. So, all right. Any other questions?
Two more questions for Mr. Hogan. Mr. Hogan, you did change that to shall in Section 3. Is that shall nullified because of Section 2?
Senator Guest, through the chair, I don't believe it is nullified. I think, it clearly stipulates that we are required to pay for the service. Looking at Section 2, it clearly states that we are obligated to pay for the service up to the appropriation with the understanding that we will look for dollars throughout the department to help pay for this service. I don't see it as a nullification or a contradiction.
And if I might just follow up with my second question, which we've talked briefly. It's still, letter intents are nice, but that's all they are. the statute still says it's limited by the amount of appropriation of the legislature, and so even though you have to do it, it's going to be limited by that amount. So what happens when you run out of money? I mean, you have the intent, but what happens when you can't use any of these funding sources?
Senator Guest, through the chair, as I've discussed previously, we will go to great lengths to make sure that doesn't happen. If it does happen, unfortunately, the worst-case scenario is that the person would go to API. We have been in positions previously where we've exceeded capacity at API. It's not the best situation to be in, but we have done that. That probably would create some pressure to move people out of API so that we're not faced with that problem. But we will do the best we can to manage the system with the resources we have available. I hope committee members, and I hope you, Senator Guest, understand that we will continue to try to do that.
Through the chair, back to Mr. Hogan, I do, and I appreciate that, and I believe you. It's just we're setting up a statute that if you're not there or if another commissioner isn't there, then those priorities can change. And we are allowing that change by keeping this language in. There's nothing here that ensures that we don't either turn away someone or put that cost to API or put that cost on the DET facility. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? I have at least one more person. Rod? Got it? Sir, appreciate your patience. Alaska Hospital Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rod Beatty. I am the president of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. There wasn't enough space to put all of it down. I would like to make a couple comments about where this bill is at now, and then maybe I could respond to a couple questions you had, Mr. Chairman, about hospital charges and reimbursement. The department's worked with us over the last couple of days diligently to try to close the gap on our concerns, and they have closed them partially but not completely. And they know what I'm about to tell you, so this is not a surprise to them. I think the changes they've made are great. The letter of intent is strong, and I think it's a good step forward. But as has been indicated, the Section 2 language, in my view, trumps everything else in this legislation and in the letter of intent if no money is available to pay for the care. And I think that's without question. And again, I've been in a public position myself for a long time, so I kind of understand how statutes work. We don't think that that's what anybody intends. But if you look at the financing of this program, it's down $1 million in fiscal year 05. And there's no assurance about having any disproportionate share funds to fill all or some part of that gap. In talking to the department, we're in agreement that there isn't a lot of days that are going to be saved in terms of patient care here when there's co-management of these patients between the facility and the department, whether they use their own clinicians or whether they use First Health. If you look at Bartlett's information, you can see that a lot of these extended stays have been approved and are directly related to the difficulty of getting medications to work effectively for this patient population. And that isn't going to go away. Both of our facilities that are most impacted by this, Fairbanks and Bartlett here in Juneau, are committed to this program, and they've seen the good it's done to the community, and it's not their intent to suggest they're pulling out if this legislation goes forward. But they're going to be very concerned because, notwithstanding the best efforts of the department staff, if they run out of money, something has to give. What I suggested earlier to the department was that the letter of intent at least have an additional sentence in it that says if everything else fails and worst case develops, that the department will work with these community hospitals to make sure that these patients are transferred to API as quickly and as, you know, safely as possible so that that care is delivered there rather than a community hospital having to try to figure out what to do, whether they discharge a patient into the community that's not safe to be there or whether they continue to provide that care with no ability to get paid for it. And build up a significant problem for that community hospital and clearly back to the community. So I would like to suggest that the letter of intent at least have that kind of commitment and in it. It's not going to undo Section 2, clearly. If there's no money, they're not going to pay is what it says. But it's going to say and give some reassurance to our hospital administrators that that's the intent of the department, is to not leave them in the community hospitals if they can't pay for it, but to move them to API. And we've had testimony in earlier hearings on this bill that that may mean they have to go over the 72 beds at times, but that's what this is all about. And they're making a choice between whether they can provide it in the community or whether they provide it through the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. With regard to how we get paid as hospitals, the rule that was referenced by Mr. Hogan in terms of paying psychiatric stays differently is not one that we support. And it's not because we don't think you should be able to see what you're getting for your money with a psychiatric stay. It's because Alaska has chosen to pay hospitals on an average rate, meaning that all diagnoses, all kinds of conditions that they treat are lumped together, and there's a very sophisticated process that the department used to review each hospital's costs and go down through those using Medicare federal principles of what's allowable and negotiating then with each hospital what that all-inclusive rate will be. By pulling out a diagnosis and paying it different than everything else, what you've done is taken the costs, and that's admittedly one of the lower cost procedures a hospital performs or care. Those costs then disappear in the equation in terms of the other costs should be going up in order to offset, or reimbursement ought to go up in order to offset what's going down. And so typically what happens in hospital reimbursement is you're either on an all-inclusive rate with everything included, or you're on a diagnosis rate. And that's what DRGs are called, diagnosis-related groups. And there's a whole bunch of them. And you can pay for a cardiac admission, you can pay for a psychiatric admission, a general surgery admission, an OB admission, and then you collect costs in that kind of way, and then you set a rate for each of those. That's the way we did it in Utah. But that's not the way it's done here. So if we want to move down that road, I think we have to move down that road all at one time. We can't just pick and choose certain diagnoses and decide to pay those differently. I want to point out that our members are open, and any time the department wants to look at their books, in fact, they have that entitlement under the provider agreement that each facility signs with the state as a condition of getting Medicaid payment. And notwithstanding what our guys might charge, when Medicaid pays, that's payment in full, unlike any other payer, be it Medicare or commercial coverage. Once we agree on a rate with the department and that's what they pay, that's it. We can't go back after the patient for anything more. It's a violation of federal law to do that. So I think that our people would be willing to have them look at anything they need to in order to get reassurance that they're only getting charged for those services directly related to the care of that patient. And that's a different question to me than how do you pay a hospital for all the things that it provides. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
apologize for mispronouncing your name.
It's a tough one.
Questions? Just parenthetically, Rod, for supplies that you handle in a hospital, you know, Q-tips or diapers or gowns or whatever, what's a reasonable markup for your having to purchase, warehouse, distribute, reorder over wholesale or retail street costs?
I wish I could give you that answer. That is a firestorm of controversy across the country right now, and you probably know. Well, Congress has been all over the states recently about billing practices, not the states' departments, but the states, all the hospitals, because what they're seeing is those costs roll up to enormous numbers for the uninsured population to get presented with a bill and have to pay 3, 4, 10 times what anybody else pays based on the way charges are done in every hospital in this country. And so they have pretty much put hospitals' feet to the fire to combat this differently, because it's not rational. Your point's well taken. And the only ones it affects are the folks without any insurance, either public or private. And then most of that really doesn't end up hitting the patient because they can't afford to pay it, and each hospital has a charity policy as to where it, you know, like whether it's 150% up to 300% of poverty, they will not go after a patient who's unable to pay those bill charges. But there isn't any rhyme or reason that I can give you for how some of those charges come out, and that's why you'll see a $10 pill, for example, on a hospital bill. But hospitals around the country are having to deal with that right now and come up with a more rational way of doing that.
Well, I understood it. Just an absolutely delightful woman from Senator Wilkins' part of the country, I think, who runs a senior care facility, kind of on a community-based thing, and she was saying she could go to one of the box stores and get adult diapers for, you know, what it was, but not much, but could get reimbursed for those for 4.5 times that, you know, under the.
Mr. Chairman, that point's well taken, but again, you know, I'd argue that's a red herring.
Yeah.
Because while you get that bill and it may show all those charges, it has no relationship to what's actually going to be paid, because each commercial insurer has worked that out with the hospital, Medicaid has worked it out with the hospital, and hospitals have for many years tried to figure out how to show all of their costs in a way that they can, you know, stay out of trouble with Medicare federally, because they can't charge more than what Medicare, you know, recognizes as their costs, and then to cover their uncompensated care. And it's produced this kind of a distortion, I think, in what the charges are on these kinds of items, and it's going to get itself straightened out in the next year or two. They're going to have to do that, because Congress has had it as well. So I think that that's something that will get fixed.
You're a man of great faith. I'm impressed. All right, any questions for Rod?
Ready for an amendment? A motion?
Any further discussion? Is there anyone who hasn't testified that wants to? Yeah, the chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 364 as amended, along with the letter of intent out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Objection?
You call it a roll? I object. I was going to make a statement, but I was going to be very brief. I do appreciate all the work that's been done on this bill, because it's come a ways from where it was in the beginning, and I know they worked hard to do that, but I can't support this, and I won't be voting for it. I have a lot of faith, but I don't have enough faith to vote for this, saying that they're going to be able to do the things that they intend that they're going to do. It could be changing administrations. It could be changing a lot of things that would preclude that. And besides that, you're saying send them to the hospital at API, and it costs more for them to be there than it does for them to be in the community-based hospitals. And besides that, it's going to be a smaller facility than what it is. And most of the time, especially in the winter months, it's full to capacity the way it is now. And I don't think that's going to work. And then you can have every good intent that you want, but intention is nothing. It's what you do in the end. And I think as lawmakers and policymakers, we should not go on the intent, what we intend to do, without having a plan in place. And we could have removed Section 2 out of that, and then it would have been the bill that I could vote for and would have voted for, because I'd like for them to have the flexibility that they need and be able to have more accountability and all those things. And I don't want you to think that I don't want you to have that. But no, not the way it is now. I can't vote for it.
I think if I am back here next January, that or those of you that are and are on this committee, I would suggest that you ask for a report. I'd be about mid-stride in this. And pardon?
I said we will hear it again, because we will hear it, whether we're on the committee or not.
Yeah. Mr. Hogan, do you have, I assume you have a way internally where you're tracking the expenditures as they go on month by month against the budget that's allotted, and kind of can project those out and see if you're going to run short before the next budget cycle. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, well, if I'm back here in January, I'd appreciate it if you'd remind me to ask you to see that when we get here.
We'd be glad to do that, Mr. Chair.
Any more discussion before we vote? Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Wilken.
Yes.
Senator Guest.
No.
Senator Davis.
No.
Senator Green.
Yes.
Chair Dyson.
Yes.
3 yeas, 2 nays.
All right. So Senate Bill 364, as amended with the accompanying intent letter, passes out of committee. What do we have up on Wednesday or Monday, Jason?
Senate Bill 243, which is Senator Elton's bill about post-secondary immunization. Senate Bill 222, which is your bill about Medicaid billing. And
then we have
confirmation hearings.
Confirmations. Okay. Have you or can you get to the committee members the confirmation names? And
they're in the office. They've been delivered.
Okay. All right. And the bills. All right. Any further to come before us? Thank you. We're adjourned.